Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
It's good to be back.
Today we're exploring a specific community, the Kurds of the Afrin region in northwestern Syria. We'll be focusing particularly on the time before 2010.
That's right. We've got a collection of historical analyses, academic reports, sources that really try to pinpoint what made the Afrini Kurds, well, distinct during that period.
Distinct from other Kurdish groups in Syria and also in Turkey, Iraq, Iran.
Exactly. It's fascinating how a community in that specific geographical spot developed its own unique flavor, so to speak.
So our aim today is really to unpack these sources, try to understand the unique weave of Afrin's history, its culture, society, politics, the economy, all before the Syrian civil war really changed things dramatically.
And hopefully get a clearer picture of what set this community apart.
Let's start then with the historical roots. The sources suggest Afrin's history goes back a long way, doesn't it? Even before perhaps a large Kurdish settlement.
It does. There's archaeological evidence pointing to Syro-Hittite settlements, Roman ones too.
Yeah.
Now, when the Kurdish settlement really takes hold is still debated a bit, but there's evidence suggesting a presence in the Mountain of the Kurds, Kurd-Dagh, possibly going back to antiquity or the Seleucid period.
That early.
Potentially. We have confirmed settlements by the 16th, 17th centuries. So what this suggests is a possibly longer, more continuous local Kurdish presence compared to some other areas in Syria.
And that's a key point of comparison, especially with the Jazeera region, right? Mm-hmm. Our sources seem to highlight that difference.
Absolutely. In Jazeera, the Kurdish majority we saw later, largely formed because of 20th century migrations, people coming from Turkey, often with French mandate authorities kind of facilitating it.
Whereas Afrin?
Afrin was different. It was described even before 2011 as the least Arabized of Syria's Kurdish regions. That suggests a demographic stability, perhaps a more organically grown local Kurdish identity over a much longer time frame.
And the geography played a part too.
Border. A huge part. The Syria-Turkey border, drawn in 1923, was pivotal. It basically cut Afrin off from the Kilis province they were linked under the Ottomans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly Afrin is incorporated into French-administered Syria. Eventually, it ends up almost completely surrounded by Turkey. That geographical isolation is really key to its story.
Okay, let's step back slightly to the Ottoman period before that border. How did Ottoman rule shape Afrin?
Well, the region came under Ottoman control after 1516, and what's interesting is that the Ottomans, especially early on, often granted a fair bit of autonomy to local Kurdish leaders.
So not direct, heavy-handed rule initially?
Not always, no. The Afrin Plateau was even recognized administratively as the Sancak of the Kurds. That tells you it had a certain distinct identity within the Ottoman system, a Sancak being, well, a kind of administrative district.
And the sources mention powerful Kurdish families extending their influence even beyond Afrin itself.
Yes, families like the Jambulads. They actually governed the wider Aleppo region for a time, which shows significant Kurdish influence there.
But that changed.
It did. The Tanzimat reforms in the 19th century, these were Ottoman efforts to centralize and modernize. And one effect was chipping away at the traditional power of these local leaders, these Kurdish beys and agas. It set the stage for different dynamics later on.
Right, which brings us to the French Mandate period, 1920-1946.
Yeah.
You mentioned the border demarcation in 23 as key. How else did this era affect Afrin?
Well, French policies towards minorities were complex. Sometimes they seem to favor minority groups to counterbalance Arab nationalism, but it wasn't consistent support for Kurdish autonomy everywhere in Syria.
And here again, the contrast with Jazeera seems important.
Crucial. As we said, Jazeera saw those big state-sponsored Kurdish migrations from Turkey during the mandate. Afrin didn't have that same mass influx.
So its existing demographic balance was largely maintained.
Exactly. Which reinforced its distinct character compared to Jazeera, where the social and political fabric was being reshaped by these newer arrivals. Afrin did get involved in early Kurdish nationalist movements, like Uybun. But ultimately, it was integrated into the new Syrian state, with its population largely as it had been.
Let's shift focus then to that sociocultural fabric itself, before 2010. What stands out from the sources?
Well, society was likely structured around tribal and kinship ties, as in many Kurdish areas, though the specific tribal names in Afrin aren't really detailed in the materials we looked at for this period.
Okay.
But what might have shaped social dynamics differently was the eponymy. It was very settled, very agricultural, especially olive cultivation. That's quite different from more nomadic or purely pastoral Kurdish communities elsewhere.
And religion. What was the landscape like?
Overwhelmingly Sunni Muslim. mostly following the Shafi'i school of law. But, and this is really significant for Afrin, there was a very strong influence of Sufism.
Sufi orders.
Yes, particularly the Qadiriyya, Naqshbandiyya, and Rifa'iyya orders were prominent. Their lodges, the Zawiyas, weren't just religious centers.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here, Roj Basha Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing.
This chai smells particularly fragrant today, a lovely blend. Definitely has the right amount of sweetness, not bitter at all today.
Excellent. A perfect moment for a pause.
Indeed, that does smell wonderful. Thank you, Hannah.
All right, back with our excellent chai. You were saying the Sufi Zawiyas in Afrin were more than just religious centers.
Yes, they were vital hubs. Social, community, cultural centers.
Mm-hmm.
We read about the Rifa'i Zawiya of Sheikh Mahmud al-Husseini in Afrin itself being a real focal point.
How so?
It helps foster a sense of Kurdish identity, acted as a mediator in local disputes. And then there was the Qadiri Zawiya of Sheikh Muhi al-Din in Aleppo, which had strong ties back to Afrin.
In Aleppo?
Right. It provided crucial support for Kurdish migrants moving from rural Afrin to the city, helping them integrate socially, find work. It created important networks.
So these Sufi networks were quite practical then, not just spiritual.
Absolutely. They even facilitated trade, creating an economic corridor, really, connecting Afrin's olive oil producers with merchants in Aleppo.
Mm.
It highlights a specific kind of socioeconomic integration. And Afrin wasn't entirely Sunni Muslim either, was it? The sources mention important minorities.
That's another distinctive feature. Significant Yazidi and Alevi minority communities lived there, adding to the religious diversity.
Tell us a bit about the Yazidis in Afrin.
They're an indigenous Kurdish-speaking group, as you know, with ancient religious roots tracing back to Iranic traditions. Their presence in Afrin dates back centuries. They were concentrated in certain villages, particularly in the southern and eastern parts of Afrin and nearby Jebel Siman.
Like Basufan, Badi, places like that.
Exactly. Their faith centers on God and seven divine beings, with Malaksa, the peacock angel, being central.
And the Alevis. How did they fit into Afrin's picture?
The Alevis in Afrin were mainly Kurmanji-speaking. Many had roots in Anatolia, with significant migration happening, particularly after the Dersim uprising in Turkey. They tended to be concentrated in the Mabatli sub-district.
And their beliefs differ from mainstream Islam, too.
Yes, Alevism has distinct practices and theology, often emphasizing gender equality more explicitly, and holding Ali in special reverence. The presence of both Yazidis and Alevis contributed to what's often described as a relatively tolerant local culture in Afrin.
Despite these religious variations, was there a shared sense of Kurdish culture?
Oh, absolutely. Things like celebrating Newroz, the Kurdish New Year, the use of the Kurmanji dialect, these were common threads. And perhaps Afrin's relative demographic homogeneity, the fact it didn't have those huge recent migrations like Jazeera, maybe fostered a more cohesive local Kurdish cultural identity. Less overtly politicized, perhaps, than in some other regions at that time.
Interesting. Okay, let's turn to the political side. How did Afrin's Kurds navigate the political landscape, especially after Syrian independence in 1946?
Well, navigating independent Syria was challenging. You had the rise of Arab nationalism, which generally viewed Kurdish identity with suspicion, if not outright hostility.
That intensified during certain periods?
Definitely. The United Arab Republic period, when Syria and Egypt merged briefly from 58 to 61, saw increased suppression of any distinct Kurdish identity.
Were there attempts at formal Kurdish political organization?
Yes. The first Syrian Kurdish political party, the KDPS, was founded in 1957. Interestingly, one of its founders was Muhammad Ali Khoja, an Alevi Kurd from Afrin. But like most Kurdish political activity, it faced immediate state repression.
And events elsewhere in Syria, like the 1962 census in Jazeera, did that affect Afrin?
Indirectly, yes. That census stripped tens of thousands of Kurds in Jazeera of their citizenship. While it didn't target Afrin directly in the same way, it sent a chilling message about the precarious status of all Kurds in Syria. It certainly shaped the overall political climate.
Then came the Ba'ath Party seizure of power in 1963. What did that mean for Afrin?
Intensified discrimination under an even more assertive pan-Arab ideology. Policies aimed at Arabization became more systematic.
Like the Arab Belt Project.
That primarily targeted Jazeera, aiming to change the demographics along the Turkish border. But Afrin wasn't immune. It experienced things like land expropriation, deliberate economic neglect policies designed, subtly or not, to encourage Kurds to leave.
Did it work? Did Afrin's demography change significantly?
Not really, no. Despite the pressure, Afrin remained overwhelmingly Kurdish. But cultural suppression was intense restrictions on using the Kurdish language, no Kurdish schools or publications allowed, denial of Kurdish ethnicity itself.
So faced with these pressures, what was the general strategy for the community?
The sources often describe it as dissimulation, preserving identity, language, culture, but doing so largely within the private sphere, within families and communities, rather than making overt public displays that could attract state repression.
But there were occasional public expressions of discontent.
There were. Sporadic protests happened, including some documented in Afrin back in 1986, and then the much larger Qamishli uprising in 2004, while centered in Jazeera, signaled rising tensions across Syrian Kurdistan.
How did external Kurdish movements, like those in Iraq or Turkey, influence politics in Afrin?
Syrian Kurdish politics has always been quite fragmented, often influenced by bigger players like the Iraqi KDP, Kurdistan Democratic Party, and very significantly, the Turkish PKK, Kurdistan Workers Party.
Syria's relationship with the PKK was complicated, wasn't it?
Extremely. Until 1998, the Syrian state actively supported the PKK, giving them safe haven as a way to pressure Turkey. But at the same time, it was suppressing its own Kurdish population's political aspirations. It was a real contradiction.
And the PYD, which became dominant later?
The PYD, Democratic Union Party, which is ideologically aligned with the PKK, was established in 2003. But its real dominance in Afrin and Rojava more broadly really came after 2011. Before that, the political landscape seems to have been more fragmented, perhaps more localized in Afrin compared to the strategically vital Jazeera.
So if you compare the pre-2010 experience of Afrin Kurds to Kurds in, say, Turkey or Iraq, what's the key difference?
It's a stark contrast. In Turkey, you had decades of systematic assimilation policies, outright language bans, and a long, violent conflict with the PKK. In Iraq, incredible volatility, periods of autonomy, but also genocide under Saddam Hussein. In Iran, political repression, economic marginalization, periodic armed conflict.
And in Syria, including Afrin.
Before 2010, it was more about systematic discrimination, cultural suppression, political marginalization, but generally avoiding that kind of large-scale, direct military conflict seen elsewhere. The strategy was more about enduring, preserving identity quietly. That dissimulation idea seems key.
Let's touch on the economy before 2010. You mentioned olive cultivation.
Yes. Overwhelmingly agrarian. Defined by olives, Afrin was maybe the primary source of olive oil for Syria, famously used in traditional Aleppo soap. Wheat production was also important and increasing.
So strong connection to Aleppo.
Absolutely fundamental. Afrin functioned almost as Aleppo's agricultural hinterland. And as we discussed, those social and religious networks, like the Sufi Zawiyas, actively helped facilitate the trade between Afrin's producers and Aleppo's merchants.
Did its geographical isolation shape its economy, too?
Definitely. Its main economic outlet was Aleppo, and perhaps some cross-border trade, licit or illicit, with Turkey. It wasn't really integrated economically with the other main Kurdish regions in Syria, like Jazeera, which had a different economic base, grains, cotton, later some oil.
Or with Iraqi or Iranian Kurdistan?
No, very different economic profiles and less direct connection compared to Iraqi Kurdistan's oil focus or the conflict-impacted economies in Turkey and Iran. Afrin's olive-based economy tied to Aleppo was quite specific.
So placing Afrin within the wider Kurdish world before 2010, how did it fit?
It was one of the three main geographically separate Kurdish-majority regions in Syria, Afrin, Kobani, and Jazeera. As we've stressed, its 20th century demographic history was distinct, especially compared to Jazeera, leading to that greater demographic homogeneity.
But still connected to Kurds elsewhere.
Oh, yes. Close kinship, cultural, economic ties existed, especially across the nearby Turkish border. Less direct interaction with Kurds in Iraq and Iran, mainly due to geography, but it was certainly part of the wider consciousness of Kurdayeti Kurdishness.
And influenced by those transnational politics we mentioned.
Heavily. Caught between the influence of the Iraqi KDP and the PKK, and profoundly shaped by the Syrian state's own complex game, supporting the PKK against Turkey, while simultaneously suppressing local Syrian Kurdish political life. That dynamic was pretty unique to the Syrian Kurdish experience, and Afrin was right in the middle of it.
So, pulling it all together, the Kurds of Afrin, before 2010, really do present a unique picture within the broader Kurdish story.
I think so. You have these long-established roots, a distinct religious landscape with those significant Yazidi and Alevi communities, alongside the Sunni majority and strong Sufi influence, an economy deeply tied to Aleppo through olive cultivation.
And a political experience shaped by navigating Syrian state control, that strategy of dissimulation, and the complex interplay of transnational Kurdish movements.
Exactly. All these threads weave together to create a very specific local identity and history.
And understanding these pre-2010 characteristics, these distinctions, feels essential for making sense of the incredibly difficult and tumultuous history the region has faced more recently.
It absolutely provides crucial context. It highlights what was there before everything changed, the deep local roots, the specific social and economic structures, the particular political pressures they lived under.
We hope this exploration today has offered some valuable insights into that rich, complex history of the Afrini Kurds before 2010. Thinking about everything we've discussed, what stands out most to you now about that picture? And, maybe, what further questions does it spark about the region's past, and indeed its present?
That's a good point to leave our listeners with. There's always more to uncover, more connections to make. We encourage everyone interested to keep exploring the sources on this vital part of Kurdish history.